Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Alice Bryant, John Russell, and Katie Weaver. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, the International Business Machines Corporation, known as IBM, says it is making technology for precision weather predictions available to everyone. The company said the new weather forecasts offer more details and bring a level of precision once available only in major industrial countries. The forecasting tool is expected to help emergency officials better predict where severe storms will hit. It may also aid airline companies planning flight paths, as well as farmers caring for crops. The new system creates weather forecasts more often and with finer details than what is available outside the United States, Europe, and Japan. Most forecasts have a resolution of 10 to 15 square kilometers and provide new information every 6 to 12 hours. IBM's Global High-Resolution Atmospheric Forecasting System goes down to 3 square kilometers and provides information every hour. That's providing a level of detail that we've not been able to see in parts of the world such as Southeast Asia, Africa, as well as South America, notes Kevin Petty. He serves as Director of Science and Forecasting at the Weather Company, which IBM owns. That kind of precision can provide details of where and when extremely heavy rain will fall. That could be useful in emergency situations and could help farmers decide when to plant, harvest, and fertilize crops. Fred Carr is Emeritus Meteorology Professor at the University of Oklahoma and was not involved with the project. Carr says the United States has a similar high-resolution forecasting system, but it's just for the U.S. because it takes so much computer time. To do it for the whole globe is a pretty significant achievement. Carr added that it is possible to quickly collect observations from radar, airplanes, and surface measurements in the United States. But he said it is not clear how IBM gets information from the other 98% of the world. Carr said he believes there will be problems in getting information, so sometimes those forecasts aren't going to be very accurate. Users will be able to decide for themselves. The system now operates on the weather.com website and the Weather Channel's application program for smartphones. In the future, IBM hopes to improve its forecasts by collecting information from atmospheric pressure sensors used in such phones. These sensors improve the precision of global positioning system, or GPS, technology. For example, they can help fitness tracking instruments measure how many steps a user has climbed. IBM said it is not currently using this information, but plans to offer users the chance to choose it. Some privacy activists and governments have criticized technology companies for collecting this kind of information. The city of Los Angeles, California, has brought a case against IBM for improperly using location information from Weather Channel app users.
As a large explosion is heard in the distance, a St. Francis Satyr butterfly flies around, ready to lay as many as 100 eggs. At one point, this brown butterfly could be found in only one place, a military base in the American state of North Carolina. An estimated 3,000 St. Francis Satyrs exist. The very small insects are one of the rarest butterfly species in the world. The almost 50-year-old Endangered Species Act protects the St. Francis Satyr along with about 1,600 other American species. However, recent changes to the law have led some to worry that threatened species in the United States may be at increasing risk.
To some experts, the existence of these butterflies means the Endangered Species Act has done its job. More than 99.2% of the species protected by it survive, the Associated Press has found. In contrast, only 39 U.S. species, or about 2% of the overall number, have made it off the endangered list. These include well-known successes, such as the bald eagle, peregrine falcon, and the American alligator. Jake Lee is the director for biodiversity at the nonprofit Environmental Policy Innovation Center in Washington, D.C. He says the condition of many species on the endangered list is worsening. Only 8% of species are improving, says an organization report. Lee said many species will remain on the list, and I don't think that's a failure of the Endangered Species Act itself, he added.
Lawmakers designed the law to prevent species from disappearing. President Richard Nixon signed the Endangered Species Act into law on December 28, 1973. The measure led to many political conflicts in the 1970s and 1980s. One famous example is the fight over plans to build the Tellico Dam in Tennessee. Now the law is in dispute once again. In September, the Trump administration changed the endangered species process. Opponents argue that the changes weaken the law. Among them, a change in the rules for species that are threatened, the classification just below endangered. Instead of saying that threatened species get the same protection as endangered species, the new rules include possible exceptions.
Nick Haddad, a Michigan State University biology professor, is the world's leading expert on the St. Francis Satyr butterfly. He got permission to go to the animal's home on the military base. The butterfly appears only twice a year for 2 weeks each time. When it does, Haddad goes to Fort Bragg and joins a team of Army biologists aiming to improve the butterfly's living environment. Haddad and his students also walk through the swamp and count the insects. It couldn't be better than this, Haddad says, smiling as a butterfly takes flight. When I see, every year, just a slight change in the right direction of the butterfly's conservation, let me tell you, that inspires me. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Alice Bryant. For the first time ever, scientists have recorded the heart rate of the world's largest creature, the blue whale. To get this reading, they attached an electrocardiogram device to the body of a whale. They found that the mammal's heart rate can slow to just 2 beats a minute as the animal searches for food below the surface of the ocean. The highest heart rate they recorded was 37 beats a minute after the whale returned to the surface for air. The team's study appears in the publication Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The blue whale is the largest animal that has ever lived. It can grow to 30 meters long and weigh as much as 181,000 kilograms. The animal's heart alone weighs more than a fully grown cow. Stanford University ocean biologist Jeremy Goldbogen led the blue whale heart rate study. He said such research helps scientists understand how massive animals operate. Generally, larger animals have slower heart rates. A normal human heart of a person at rest beats 60 to 100 times each minute. It increases to about 200 beats a minute during exercise. The smallest mammals, shrews, have heart rates of more than 1,000 beats per minute. The researchers recorded 9 hours of information on a 22-meter-long male from the Pacific Ocean off the coast of California. The data did not come easily. First, we have to find a blue whale, which can be very difficult, Goldbogen said, because these animals live across massive areas of open ocean. But with years of research experience and some luck, he explained, the team was able to position a small boat along the whale's left side. Then the researchers connected a special recording device to a very long pole. As the whale surfaced to breathe, they quickly deployed the device as near to the animal's heart as possible, just behind its left flipper. The small device had 4 suction cups on it, permitting it to remain on the whale for several hours. Blue whales belong to the baleen whale family. These whales are toothless. Instead of teeth, they have baleen, a softer material made from the same substance as fingernails. To feed, the whales flood their mouths with huge amounts of water and then release it through the baleen. It serves as a filter,
trapping krill and other very small sea animals that make up the baleen whale diet. During feeding dives, the blue whale under observation showed extremely low heart rates, usually of 4 to 8 beats a minute, and as low as 2 beats a minute. After surfacing to breathe after food dives, the whale had heart rates of 25 to 37 beats per minute. Blue whales have fascinated biologists and people in general for years. They are not only the largest and biggest-brained animals, they are also the loudest. They can communicate with other whales hundreds of miles away. I'm Katie Weaver.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. 2 summers had gone by since the start of the American Civil War, and the North had not yet won a major battle in Virginia. The Army of the Potomac, the strongest of the Union armies, had tried to seize Richmond, the Confederate capital. General George McClellan moved the army up to the very gates of the city. But then, General Robert E. Lee led his southern forces in a fierce attack. It smashed McClellan's army and drove them away from Richmond. Morris Joyce and Jack Moyles continue the story of the Civil War.
President Abraham Lincoln and his new Chief General Henry Halleck put together a new Northern force. They called it the Army of Virginia. They gave command of it to General John Pope, a successful fighter in the West. Pope began to move south toward Richmond. Halleck ordered McClellan to bring his army up to join Pope. Together, they could smash through the Confederate defenses around Richmond. Lee decided to hit Pope before McClellan could join him. He left a few thousand troops to guard Richmond, then took the rest north. Lee moved up to the Rappahannock River, across from Pope's army.
Lee sent Stonewall Jackson with 24,000 men on a quick march around the western end of Pope's lines. Jackson and his men marched more than 80 kilometers in 2 days. They got behind Pope and seized a huge northern supply center at Manassas. Pope moved to smash them. They burned the captured supplies. Then they moved a few kilometers away to a long, low hill just northwest of the Bull Run battleground, where Southern forces defeated a Northern army a year before. Jackson hid his troops in woods along the hill and waited for General Lee to arrive with the rest of the Southern army.
But before Lee could get there, Union troops, thousands of them, marched down the road below Jackson. Jackson decided to attack, to hold them there until Lee arrived with help. The fighting was furious. Neither side broke. The fighting died down at the end of the day, and Jackson's men moved back to their positions on higher ground. They made their lines along a partly built railroad on the side of the hill.
From his headquarters on the hill, Jackson watched the Northern forces prepare for battle. Many thousands of the enemy were marching into position. Pope brought up all his soldiers, and others were on the way from bases near Washington. Several thousand of McClellan's troops, commanded by General Porter, were arriving from the south. It was a mighty force, much larger than Jackson's army. Jackson was worried. He sent an officer back to find General Lee. He sent a message. Lee must hurry. Jackson faced a big army.
Pope's army was large, but it was poorly organized. The men had been rushed into position. The order to attack was given before all the troops were ready. So, the attack began slowly, and Jackson was able to fight it off. But then, more and more Northern soldiers joined the fight. The two sides struggled for hours in the hot summer sun. Jackson's men almost broke. Men prayed for the long day to end. The sun seemed to stand still.
Finally, the sun went down, and the battlefield became dark. Jackson's men had held, but they paid a terrible price. Thousands were killed or wounded. Northern losses were even greater. Most of the Union troops had fought bravely. They had hit the Confederate lines time after time. But one large group of soldiers did not get into the battle at all that day. This was the group from McClellan's Army of the Potomac, led by Fitz John Porter. Pope had ordered Porter to strike at the right end of Jackson's lines. Porter took his troops several kilometers past Jackson's right and stopped them. His soldiers remained there all day, out of the battle. Porter said later he believed the Confederate forces were too strong for his men.
Other groups of McClellan's men were arriving in Alexandria, 30 kilometers to the east. Pope asked that they be sent to help him. McClellan was ordered to send them immediately, but he refused to do so. He said they were not in condition to fight, and he would not send them. General Pope still thought he was facing only Jackson's army. He refused to believe reports that Lee had arrived on the battlefield with 30,000 more Southern soldiers. Pope thought Lee was still far to the west of Manassas.
Pope knew that Jackson's army had taken a terrible beating in the 2 days of bloody fighting, and he was sure that Jackson would try to withdraw the next day to retreat to the west. Pope divided his forces that night. He left thousands in place in front of Jackson's lines. The others were moved back. They were ordered to get ready for a march west to block Jackson's retreat. Pope made a terrible mistake. Jackson was not planning to retreat. He was waiting with Lee to smash the Northern Army. And that is what happened the next day. Thank you.
Southern troops attacked Jackson's lines. The fighting was bitter. Pope's forces almost smashed through. But then Lee ordered his men to move forward to help Jackson. Confederate artillery broke up the Northern attack. When the Northern troops began to retreat, Lee and Jackson attacked with all their might. Many of Pope's men were not prepared for battle. They were standing together in groups, ready for marching. They could not stop the Southern attack. The Confederates pushed Pope's army back across the old Bull Run battlefield.
Near the end of the day, Northern forces succeeded in organizing a stronger defensive line. The Southern attack slowed down, then stopped. Lee sent Jackson around the north end of Pope's line to try to stop the Northern retreat. Lee did not want the defeated Union Army to escape. He wanted to destroy it. But heavy rain held up Jackson's troops. They were discovered and attacked by a strong Northern force. Jackson could move no farther. He could not stop Pope's retreat to Centerville and Washington. The Northern army escaped.
But it left behind thousands and thousands of dead and wounded. Confederate doctors treated their own men, then tried to help the wounded soldiers of the other side. General Lee permitted Northern medical wagons to return to the battlefield, and they began to carry the wounded back to Centerville. Groups of McClellan's army arriving from Alexandria met Pope's men in Centerville. They laughed and shouted at the tired, beaten soldiers. Many said they were glad that Pope had lost. One of McClellan's generals, Samuel Sturgis, greeted Pope at Centerville. "I always told you, Pope, that if they gave you enough rope, you would hang yourself."
What happened at Bull Run created bitter anger among the people of the North, anger against their military leaders. People felt that a year had been wasted, that thousands had died for no real purpose. The year before, Southern troops sent a Northern army fleeing from Bull Run. Now it was happening again. The Army of the Potomac was back where it started. As the facts of the battle became known, cries of anger became even louder. The people demanded answers. Why did McClellan and his men move so slowly? Why did they refuse to go to Pope's aid? Why did Pope let Jackson get behind him? Why were 14,000 soldiers lost?
Most members of Lincoln's cabinet believed McClellan was responsible. Treasury Secretary Chase said McClellan should be shot. War Secretary Stanton said he should be dismissed immediately. He and three other cabinet members signed a note demanding that Lincoln remove McClellan as commander of the Army of the Potomac. Lincoln agreed that what McClellan had done was shocking. He said it was clear that McClellan wanted Pope to fail. But Lincoln said he would not remove McClellan. He said he knew that McClellan was not an aggressive general. But he said McClellan was a good organizer who could build the defeated army into a strong force.
General Robert E. Lee, however, would not wait while McClellan rebuilt the army. He decided to carry the war to the north.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.